former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on a football Friday morning. It's been so many months since we've been able to say a football Friday. Mike Palm, how we doing today?
Wonderful. It was a really exciting preseason games last night. Got into the teens in both of them. I wasn't sure on that game, New England, if there was ever going to be a score.
Under every which way.
Every which way. Just keep that Bears game scared the bettors off the unders, the Hall of Fame game. But last night was an under bettors dream. So yeah, we had a nice crowd in the book last night, obviously. Yeah,
nice crowd in the book right now.
Yeah, some baseball going on. Obviously, the Olympics are coming to a conclusion here today with gold medal soccer match, a 4x1 final in both the men and the women's, the heptathlon wrapping up. So a few major events, and the men's basketball, obviously, some interesting semifinal action yesterday.
Wow. I mean, it was it was breathtaking basketball seeing, because I missed a lot of the first half. We were doing the show. You were doing the Palms pressing three. Like, we wrapped up at noon yesterday, and the game started at noon. But, like, you know, in the midst of driving home, I had stuff I had to do on the way home. By the time I settled in, it was like about a minute, 90 seconds or so to go in the first half. And I'm like, what is going on? Because I didn't even anticipate watching the game. I was like, you know what? I might just, like, take a nap or whatever. I'm going to dinner later on this evening. I just want to go ahead and rest and kind of unplug a little bit. But I was like, well, I can't unplug because now it's compelling that we're down double digits in an Olympic basketball game with all these Hall of Famers or Hall of Famers-to-be on Team USA. So I settled in and watched the second half. And boy, I'm glad I did, because what a game that was. You saw the patriotism on both sides. I'd never seen Nikola Jokic that fired up about anything before. And you could tell that he wanted to win this for his country, Serbia. Very passionate about playing for his home country. He's the best player in the world for my money, and he showed it yesterday. But then LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, the guys who have kind of been the torchbearers of the NBA the last decade plus, they were the ones that saved our bacon as Team USA moves on to the gold medal game against France.
Yeah, there were different plus numbers you could have got the USA in game. Yeah. I didn't see it till the start of the fourth quarter. I saw none of it. I just happened to look at my phone. I said, what? Wow. Right? And I looked up at the screen and I said, I gotta watch the rest, find a way to watch the rest of this.
Did you fire on any USA?
I did not. By the time I was convinced that they were gonna make it close, the number had already flipped to them -1.5. At that point I said, I'm just gonna let it go. I just think LeBron will will this team to victory. Now, 17-point favorite. They opened 15.5 against host country France. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that now up to 17. I'm not sure France isn't worth a little look here as the home team.
The crowd is. The whistle?
Every game they've gotten the whistles. Every single game they've gotten the whistles.
The call was made.
there was a play yesterday where Wembanyama, like, rebounded, defensive rebound, and he kind of got inadvertently hit in the face. He fumbled the ball. Germany picked it up and laid it in. And after he laid it in, there was a whistle. Said, no, there was a foul on the rebound. I'm like, that was 4 seconds ago. Four seconds ago.
Some funny business going on. You know, you never know. It's just funny business.
They're not a great offensive team, France. But boy, with the two bigs, they scour the boards. It's tough to throw the ball over the top of them. I don't know. They got a lot going in their favor. 17 just seems like a big number.
It does seem like a big number to me. And, like, I don't know if it's just I'm overreacting to USA playing a close game against Serbia, because I don't want to overreact to that, because USA is obviously the by far and away the best team in the field. But, I mean, France is not bad. And they got Wembanyama, they got Gobert, Nicholas Batum, Evan Fournier. Yeah. These are guys who've played in the NBA, and they have the home cooking. Like, I think that's something that you have to factor in when you're handicapping this game. Like, they're going to get a good whistle, and the fact that this keeps going out in favor of the USA, I know France is very flawed, but it keeps going out in favor of the USA. I don't know if it's patriotism, or I think maybe the market had just kind of an anti-France sentiment going into the tournament based on how they played in the exhibition matches leading up to the Olympics. So maybe that's also baked into this thing as well, but I just think that's a big number to play in what's going to be a really, really raucous environment in favor of the underdog. So if it's me, I'm playing France, or I'm not playing the game at all. Maybe you could get an in-game opportunity if USA starts slow. let's say France is maybe just kind of riding the emotional high of playing in the gold medal game with their home crowd. Maybe that's what kind of gets them going early on, and maybe you can get the USA at a more palatable number. But I don't think I'd ever want to lay 16.5, or, and it looks like we might be headed towards 17 in that match. But we have a fun show for you guys over these next couple of hours that we'll get to. 30 minutes from now, Mark Schofield, NFL writer for SB Nation, will be joining us as we break down the National Football League preseason. His thoughts on what we saw last night. Saw the Lions-Giants game. The Giants ended up being victorious in that one, 14-3. Then, of course, the Patriots and Panthers. Patriots won it 17-3. I have thoughts on Drake May that we'll get to at some point during this this conversation here. But we'll talk to Mark Schofield all about that, as well as the comments from Jerry Jones, Cowboys owner, general manager, and president, about one CeeDee Lamb and where that contract negotiation stands right now as it's August 9th. Then in hour number two, 2:15 Eastern time, 11:15 Pacific, Taylor Mathis, betting analyst. She will join us in studio. Taylor's been in town for Bet Bash. We'll get her thoughts on Bet Bash. I believe she was part of a panel at Bet Bash this morning. Also, she has MLB plays, NFL, and college football plays. We'll break it down with Taylor in hour number two as the Bet Bash keeps rolling along here at Circa, Mike.
Yeah, the panels today, and then tonight is the second annual Hall of Fame induction. 10 folks yes. going in. That starts at 7 o'clock tonight, black tie affair, so I had to bring my tux in and the shoes and all that.
You get the shoes shined and everything?
Shoes shined. Nice. Two guys from Circa, although spent the majority of their careers, obviously, in other places, Richie Bacciolari and Nick Bogdanovich also going in tonight. So it's a great honor for us, and it should be a fun night and a good dinner up at the Galaxy.
Nice. That'll be a whole lot of fun. I know you guys have been doing that for, a few years now?
This is the second year.
Last
year was the first year. And last year, we had a little ceremony down there because we were sort of christening the Hall of Fame itself.
Yep.
We're not doing that this year, but I believe at 11 o'clock, is when they're 11 a.m. about an hour from now, the plaques are scheduled to go up for the 10 that are getting inducted this year.
That'll be really cool. So 10 people in this induction class.
Yeah, there's a formula, 5 living and 5 past each year that they follow. And then the people that get voted in that become a part of the committee that votes. So I think they started with 16, and then those 5 got on the committee. So now there's 21. And then next year there'll be 26. You need 75% of the vote to get inducted.
It's like the MLB Hall of Fame. It's just strict stuff out here. MLB's what, 80% or what? I forgot what the number is.
Yeah, 775, but it's really, really tough.
Yeah, but hey, it's really cool that you guys do this here, and it's one of the many attractions at Circa. The sportsbook's obviously a big attraction, but if you visit the sportsbook, you'll also see the Sports Betting Hall of Fame that is prominently displayed here at the book. It's going to be a fun weekend here, I think, with all these preseason games going on. What did you make of the games last night? Patriots being the game that was sort of the marquee one, national television. Everybody saw that game as they shut down the Carolina Panthers. Goes under. That's New England's team proved to be correct as it went from 1 all the way out to 6.5. They win the game by 14.
Yeah, I mean, this team was right, but I mean, both teams... Neither team looked that impressive. I watched the first half, and that, I didn't see the other game. I didn't have access to it, but it was tough to watch from an offensive standpoint.
Very.
There wasn't a lot of big plays. These teams stayed behind the sticks on both sides. Attempts to throw the ball down the field at all were unsuccessful. You know, the first score was... you got a good punt, and then you got the ball at midfield. They returned down to the 30. They broke one play, and then that kind of opened it up for New England. They started to get into a little more of a rhythm, but not a lot I can draw away other than, you know, maybe the Panthers have a ways to go still. There's a lot, there's some love in the market for the Panthers. Obviously, their number ticked up a half point, and we've heard respected people like Adam Chernoff really high on the Panthers, saying he thinks they're a 7 or 8-win team, possibly even a playoff team. He was with the alts. He said, you remember the original number was 5, bet over 5.5. When I asked him, he said over 6.5 and sprinkle a little over 7.5. He said,
wow, that much in on Dave Canales, or is there another reason why he loves the Panthers so much?
Loves Dave Canales.
Okay,
loves Dave Canales, and obviously the returning a good core on defense.
I know VSiN's very own Wes Reynolds in our football betting guide, which we encourage everyone to go ahead and subscribe to. You got to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Wes picked Carolina to win the NFC South. He was the one Lone Ranger to pick the Carolina Panthers in our guide when we're making all of our predictions. And Matt Youman said, hey, I think this is being a little bit of a hero play, but I think that there's a case to be made in a division where I don't really feel good about any of the teams, like whether it's the Atlanta Falcons and like all the hype that they have with Kirk Cousins now coming over from Minnesota. He's still coming off the Achilles injury. What is that going to look like? What does that defense look like? So, I mean, I'm not really riding the Carolina Panther the bandwagon, but I at least would be open-minded to hearing the case because I think there's flaws, many of flaws, with all four of those teams in that division.
I would say I'm down on the Saints in terms of where they're at in the market. I think
they're the third choice in that division.
I know, but like the win total is the same on the Saints and the Buccaneers. If I was going to take a shot with anybody, I'd probably take a shot at the two-time defending champs, with the Buccaneers. Yeah. They're kind of been overlooked here.
Yeah. They were overlooked last year, too.
I'm not buying the Falcons either. I'm not buying that Cousins is the savior. I'm not buying the head coaching change makes a positive difference. But this is kind of a default division, right? Who's mm-hmm. the least ugly duck?
Yeah,
and that's the team you're going to pick. So West took a stand. Good for him.
What did you make of Drake May only playing one series, three passing attempts last night?
I didn't understand it. I don't get this.
I thought it was asinine.
I don't get not playing Caleb Williams in the preseason. I don't get why wouldn't you want to get these guys in there? Even though it's preseason, there's still a speed to the game. You're playing against professional athletes. Isn't that the big learning curve is the speed of the game? Don't you want to get the guy in there and get some reads and react in that time in real time?
Especially Drake May, who's not going to be your week one starter.
Right.
If he's not going to play now, when is he going to play? And people were saying, oh, well, the offensive line is bad. They don't trust the second. He's going to have to play behind bad offensive lines. Like, what are you going to put him in bubble wrap his entire career? Like, a part of learning is knowing how to protect yourself and doing all those things. After the game, Patriots head coach Gerard Mayo said, I expect Drake to get more reps than he did in the first game against the Eagles. What are you, a reporter? You're the one that controls how many reps he gets. Like, who makes the decision? It's ridiculous. I'm not buying into this Gerard Mayo New England Patriots thing. I know this is just the preseason, it's just small, but just early indications. I think that some clownery going on there with the Pats. Speaking of clownery, we're going to talk about my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, coming up next here on the Lombardi Line. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, hanging out here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. 15 minutes from now, Mark Schofield of SB Nation will join us to give us his thoughts around the National Football League, what we can expect to see throughout the preseason, and more importantly, what we can expect to see in the regular season. We'll get Mark's thoughts on that one 15 minutes from now. We also, in the Olympics right now, have the gold medal match in men's soccer between France and Spain. Spain, I tell you what, man, they're just becoming like the best football nation in the world, aren't they?
The men's team.
They have a 3-1 lead against France in the gold medal match.
I thought that in the European Championships, the men's team was just head and above everybody else. The way they played, mm-hmm. the style they played, their ability to generate offense, it was not close.
Oh, yeah.
They could control pace of game. It was really beautiful soccer, what they played. Now, it converted here to the under 23 format in the Olympics,
which is scary for the rest of the world.
But I mean, the kid's 16, Yamil Amman. I mean, it is scary. But this generation certainly playing beautiful football.
Yeah, it's like we just went out of the Spain generation from a decade ago when they won World Cup Euro, and everyone thought, okay, Spain's kind of done for now. And now here we go. Like 10 years later, looks like they got another generation where, I mean, at this point, they should probably be the favorites to win the World Cup, if you ask me, based on how they played at the Euros. And, like, Brazil doesn't look all that good. Like, I think Spain should be – and I think Brazil and France might be, like, the co-favorites to win the World Cup. I think Argentina is in the mix as well. But in 2 years, when this thing comes to the United States, Mexico, and Canada, I think Spain is going to be the best team that shows up as long as they stay healthy. So
I agree.
It's going to be tough to beat that nation. And it looks like we're headed toward – I mean, the women's team, they won the Women's World Cup. It's pretty remarkable what that country's done, men and women, and the resources that they have to sort of develop all these really talented players. Speaking of the National Football League, though, as we get back to the gridiron on this Football Friday on the Lombardi Line, I'm sure you saw the comments from Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. When asked about CeeDee Lamb and where the contract negotiation stood between their all-pro wide receiver and the team, and Jerry Jones said, I have no urgency in getting a deal done with CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb then went to Twitter and quote tweeted the tweet from one of the Dallas Cowboys beat writers. And the quote tweet was simple. LOL. How do you see this playing out between CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jones, and this organization?
Well, I think it's Jerry Jones may just be the mouthpiece now of the organization. I think this has become Stephen Jones' team, and he's done with going out and paying money for all the stars that his dad did the last 30 years that hasn't gotten him a championship. And I think this Cowboys team might look like the Yankees when the kids got control after George left. Now, I'm not saying that level of kind of spendthrift, although
you can make an argument.
The fans are very disappointed.
I think they're
disappointed.
They're like 28th or 29th right? in cash spending.
Didn't go out and do anything and at the trade deadline. But I think it might just be Steven is saying enough is enough, and we're not going to kowtow, and we're going to hold the line, and our number is our number. And if you want to stay and play with us, you stay and play with us. And if you don't, so be it when you become a free agent.
It's really
the problem here is that there's such a drop off from CeeDee Lamb to number two.
Yeah.
I think it's 1,100 yards was the difference between CeeDee Lamb and the next most receiving yards. You know, most teams, I think it averages in the NFL under 400 between the number one and the number two, or somewhere right around 400. Dallas is the biggest, 1,100 yards. So there's a significant drop off there.
CeeDee Lamb last year led the team with 181 targets. I mean, that's crazy. The next highest receiver was Jake Ferguson with 102 targets. He had 760. So it's a 1,000-yard drop-off between Lamb and Ferguson.
It's unbelievable. But meanwhile, in the playoff game against Green Bay, there was something was going on there.
CeeDee Lamb was dropping passes.
There was talk that there was problems during the week between those two, Dak and he. I mean, that's some of the stuff that came out after the game. But early, he was dropping passes, and that's what forced him to punt, and the Packers built that lead early. And then they could never get back into the game.
100%. We do have the soundbite from Jerry Jones yesterday afternoon at Cowboys training camp in Oxnard. Here's what Jerry had to say when he was asked about the Lamb contract.
Are you saying there's a sense of urgency as you begin the preseason to get CD done?
No.
No? Why do you say that?
I'm I went to high school, or I went to college. I don't know why I said it, but I'm just saying I don't know. I don't have a sense of urgency about getting it done.
It's a long-standing tradition.
Pick any reason you want. I said Nobu 2 days ago. Give that as a reason. Yes, sir.
I went to Nobu 2 days ago. Give that as a reason of why I have no urgency. I mean, I'll say this. I have been very critical of the Jones family. I was very critical of them in January when they decided to bring back Mike McCarthy into what is a lame duck year as a head coach since his contract expires at the end of the season, whenever that is. With that said, though, what is he supposed to say? I want to get a deal done as fast as possible. You're in a negotiation. You're not going to go out and say, I really think CeeDee Lamb's the best player in the league and I really want to sign him really, really bad. Like, you're not going to say that. So, like, the bigger problem is what's been happening throughout the offseason. These comments, I think, are just more noise than anything.
I also think the quote is inaccurate. To quote that he said, I don't have a sense of urgency. He did not say that. The question was, do you have a sense of urgency? And he answered no.
He said no.
It's different than him coming out and saying, I have no sense of urgency to sign CeeDee Lamb before the season begins, right?
100%. And this is the same owner that said, Zeke who? When Ezekiel Elliott was holding out and Tony Pollard had the nice game in the preseason and everyone's like, oh, Zeke who? Like, and they ultimately gave Zeke his money. Like, I don't think that that's an issue. I think the bigger issue for the Cowboys, though, and one that, like, as a fan, what frustrates me, because everyone is so angry at the Jones family for their inactivity throughout this offseason. It's like, oh, we got to pay CeeDee Lamb, pay Dak Prescott, pay all the... It's like, they didn't win Jack last year. They won the division and then got embarrassed. We were there at the Diabarkander.
Second half, I was down there with
you. And we both agreed. We said, this is the most embarrassing loss in Cowboys franchise history. Like, it was horrendous how the season ended. And CeeDee Lamb was a part of that. He was dropping passes in the first half. Dak Prescott was throwing a pick six at the end of the first half. Like, these are things that we saw. This happened. Why do you need to pay all these guys these top-of-the-market deals when they've actually won zero for you during their tenure?
But at the same time, I mean, the defense didn't stop anything.
Horrendous.
They were always playing. They score, but they couldn't get – you couldn't get consecutive scores because Green Bay moved the ball.
Now
we have Zimmer.
Dan Quinn's in Washington. Now there's Mike Zimmer. Yeah. Zimmer. But you know what I'm saying?
Zimmer's like, back. The
Cowboys have won zero Super Bowls with CeeDee Lamb. They can win zero Super Bowls without him.
Well, I say that about Dak.
It applies.
Well, they haven't gotten to an NFC championship. You could say that about Romo. 100%. Never got to a championship game.
Aikman's doing freaking games.
They criticized Danny White. He went to 3 straight championship games all on the road. I mean, right? I mean,
like, I just don't get, like, if I was running the Dallas Cowboys, and then, like, from a betting standpoint, like, I think that this will get baked into the number in terms of the win totals and all this stuff. There's just been an anti-Cowboy kind of sentiment out there. I think it's probably gone a little bit too far, just given the fact that Dak and McCarthy won a lot of regular season games. But just from, like, a team-building standpoint, I would be willing to let CeeDee, like, if CeeDee Lamb wants to request a trade, cool. Somebody give me a first-round pick, trade CeeDee Lamb. Because you got to rebuild. You can't pay all 3 guys, because I would pay Micah Parsons, because I think he's by far the best player on the team, and it's harder to find a pass rusher than it is to find a wide receiver. But CeeDee Lamb...
Where would you rank CeeDee Lamb amongst wide receivers?
He's top 10.
Okay, where would you rank Dak Prescott amongst quarterbacks?
I would say fringe top 10.
I had him 10th because we had this debate question. How many quarterbacks starting in the league next month would you take before Dak? And I had 9 on my list. Dustin had 12.
But that tells you... Right.
And Tom Gable from Borgata actually had 11. Right, so that's where he is, 10, 11, right, 13, those are the rates.
And he's going to make $60+ million with us, with the Cowboys or with another team in March.
Might be more than $60 million a year.
Probably. It might be all guaranteed if he goes to the open market. And now you're having to pay a quarterback a bajillion dollar a year contract when he is, what, between 8 and 12? On like maybe he's 8 on his best day, he's 12th on his worst day. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the Jones family's going to do it because they want to stay relevant, but I don't think they really care about winning. They just care about relevance more so than anything because they did their winning earlier in the 90s. So they said those 3 Super Bowls, they'll never go away. So we're comfortable being relevant in that regard. But yeah, I just think that the fact that there's so much of Cowboys need to sign all of these guys, I would like them to just tear it down and rebuild, similar to what Minnesota did. And just say, we're done with Kirk Cousins. We're not paying you. We're going to draft a young quarterback, and we're going to restart this whole thing because you got to free yourself from this contractual jail that they've been sitting in since 2021. Like, it's just, it's not sustainable, and Dak is not good enough to be getting paid what he's going to get paid and elevate the other pieces in the roster. He's just not that guy. And that's not to say he's not good. He's just not great, which is what you need if you're going to pay a guy that kind of a money. But that is my rant on the Dallas Cowboys. As it pertains to their win total, I don't necessarily think I'd run to bet the under just because everyone's been doing that all summer. I think there's some spots where it's even 9.5. They've won 12 games 3 straight years. So I still think they make the playoffs, but unfortunately they'll meet their demise in the wild card round like they typically do in this Dak McCarthy era. 20 seconds left in this segment.
Well, we got to all the headlines.
Yeah. We did not, actually. We'll get to them at some point during this show. But on the other side, we'll continue this conversation about Dak Prescott and also some of the headlines with our guest, Mark Schofield of SB Nation, talking all things National Football League here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line on a Friday. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. It's a football Friday. We had games last night. We have 3 more tonight, and then we get a full slate, 9 games coming up on Saturday. And to help us break down some more football, we're bringing in Mark Schofield, NFL writer over at SB Nation. Mark joins us courtesy the Progressive Guest Line. Mark, thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. Want to ask you, though, about this Dallas Cowboys situation. Yesterday, Jerry Jones said that there's no urgency to get a contract done with CeeDee Lamb, as now it sits August 9th and the regular season rapidly approaching. How do you see this playing out, and have the Cowboys maybe gone about this the best way from your estimation?
Well, happy Friday, friends. Great to be back with you. And certainly those comments brought about a lot of reaction from social media on, you know, Cowboys fans on social media wondered if Jerry Jones knows that the season starts in a few weeks, and certainly CeeDee Lamb himself with a quick LOL response when that quote was floated around on social media last night. And you know, to the question you sort of wrapped it with there, did they handle this the right way? I don't think so. I mean, here we are, you know, on the cusp of the first full weekend of preseason games. CeeDee Lamb's been a holdout, hasn't been to practice yet, and clearly it seems that there's some frustration, at least on his side, that this has not been resolved yet with a long-term extension. Dak Prescott, you know, he's a free agent next year, coming into the first of what I believe are 4 void years on his current deal. He's looking for a long-term extension. And last weekend, he had some comments of his own saying, look, I know the money is there. It's just a matter of getting it done. Now you have a situation where Cowboys players like Dak were asked about Jerry Jones's comments yesterday after practice. And Dak came out and said, look, I know what you want to ask. There's urgency on my side to get this done with respect to CeeDee Lamb's contract situation. He wants to see their top receiver back in camp to get working together, ready to go for the start of the season. Now, where Dak said next was, look, you know, it'll take one or two practices, one or two days for them to get back on the same page. They've obviously worked together in the past, but the Cowboys have really dug their own grave here. I mean, they're up against it now with CeeDee Lamb. They've got a situation looming with Dak Prescott, and what might be working against them is the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty about next year's quarterback class, which could mean that there are a lot of suitors for Dak should he hit free agency. Mm. You've got Micah Parsons then also liking CeeDee Lamb's tweet as well, and he's due for a contract extension at some point in the next year or so. And so they've really dragged their feet here, and it's created a situation where headed into the start of the season, one of your most important players is not there. They did not go about this the right way, and it could be coming back to bite them pretty soon.
Mark, you're a Maryland guy. I have a couple questions about the Ravens. First, you know, Lamar, when he first went to practice, he was sick. They didn't really know what he was sick. He's had COVID twice. He was fatigued. He missed parts of practices. How concerned are you with Lamar's overall health moving forward? And the second part of the question is Justin Tucker. You know, his stats from beyond 50 last year were very ordinary. And as far as field goal percentage, his last two seasons are his worst since 2015. Are we starting to see the decline of Justin Tucker?
With respect to Tucker, I don't know if we're starting to see a decline or it's just two bad years, but it's certainly notable. Like you said, field goal percentage, some of the stats from long range aren't what we're used to seeing from Justin Tucker. I still think he's one of the better kickers, if not one of the best kickers in the league right now. But, you know, he is getting up there a bit. We have seen a bit of a dip in production from him, and it's certainly something to keep in mind as you get, say, later into the season when, you know, you're trying to close out a division title, perhaps, or trying to make a deep run to the playoffs. You know, the Ravens, they play in an outdoor stadium. Like you said, I'm a Maryland guy. We're getting the remnants of Tropical Storm Debbie here today. It's not nice out today, and it's sometimes not nice when you're kicking an M&T Bank in November, December, January. And so, you know, they'll look to get better production out of Tucker this season than they have the past couple of years, but it is something to watch. With respect to Lamar, I don't think there's concern right now about his health. Like you said, he missed some practices. He was battling an illness, but they're going to need him. He's going to be a big part, obviously, of their offense this year. And there are a lot of expectations that this Ravens offense, and in particular, this Ravens run game, is going to take yet another step forward with the addition of Derrick Henry. You can just think about all the different things they can do in the run game with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry next to each other, almost a bit of a thunder and lightning type scenario with a quarterback and a running back like Derrick Henry. And that's certainly going to open up, you would think, opportunities for plays in the passing game, because if you're a defensive coordinator headed into a game week against the Ravens, you're worried about you're worried about Henry. You're worried so much about what they can do in the run game. You might commit extra resources towards that, load the box a bit, and it creates opportunities in a downfield passing game. So that's certainly another aspect to watch. The Ravens are in a very tough division. That North looks, to me at least, as one of the better, if not the best division in football. And they're going to need Tucker at his best. They're going to need the best they can get from Derrick Henry, and certainly the best they can get from Lamar Jackson if they're going to win that division again.
Hey, hanging out with Mark Schofield, NFL writer of SB Nation. He's joined us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Mark, I want to talk about another wide receiver who's disgruntled with the contract. That's San Francisco 49ers All-Pro receiver Brandon Ayuk. In the betting markets right now, the 49ers are the clear choice to be the favorites to win the NFC and get back to the Super Bowl once again. Can they get back to the Super Bowl without Brandon Ayuk? And if he's traded, is it going to the Steelers, or is there another team that you think might actually jump in and be a mystery team in these Ayuk sweepstakes?
You know, I think the Niners can get back to a Super Bowl without Brandon Ayuk, but doing it without him will make that road a bit tougher and a bit steeper because, you know, they certainly have a lot of weapons in that offensive huddle. You look at Christian McCaffrey, you look at Deebo Samuel, Kyle Juszczyk offers a lot with what he can do out of the backfield, and they move him around in that offense. Certainly George Kittle, who remains one of the game's best tight ends. But you could make a legitimate case that as in terms of a pure wide receiver, Ayuk is their best wide receiver. Deebo Samuel does so many things for them, both, you know, obviously as a receiver, but also out of the backfield. He's sort of that another member of that offense that can fill different roles, that sort of versatile type of player that they can move all over the field. But as a pure route runner, as a pure receiver, Ayuk is a very talented player. And he opens up a lot of what they do in the run game, a lot of what they do underneath with Debo, with McCaffrey, with what he can do as a wide receiver. And losing that component to their offense would be a difficult thing for them to overcome. Now, Kyle Shanahan's talked this week about how, you know, they can do that. They can certainly be a very good offense without him. But from my mind, at least, they need to find a way to, you know, bring him back into the fold, get a new deal done. If they can't, if they do move him, certainly it looks like Pittsburgh is the likely destination, given everything that's come out, all the report in the past week or so about how, you know, there might be a deal done. There is a deal done. It seems like Pittsburgh is the most likely destination. Cleveland has been talked about, but they're in a very difficult cap position. You wonder if they could even get an extension done that Ayuk would sign off on to make that kind of deal happen. If they did, they would probably have to part ways with an Amari Cooper type player. I don't know if they want to do that. New England has pulled out of it. Apparently, there was an idea that Ayuk didn't want to go there after all, even though they have a ton of cap space. They're going through a rebuild. And if you're Ayuk, you're in a position where you probably want to win now rather than 3 years down the road. As far as a potential mystery team, I'd keep an eye on the Washington Commanders. Ayuk, he caught passes from Jaden Daniels back at Arizona State. I know that sounds a little bit weird because Ayuk's been in the league for a long time and Daniels is a rookie, but there's that built-in chemistry between the two. They had some great games together, had some big moments together on campus at Arizona State. And if you want to put a rookie quarterback in a position to be successful as a rookie, give him somebody he has built-in chemistry with. That's Brandon Ayuk. I don't know if Washington gets back in it, but if there would be a mystery team, I'd keep an eye on the Commanders.
Mark, we got about a minute and a half less. The Broncos have listed Jared Stidham as their starter for the preseason game against the Colts, actually having Bo Nix third on the depth chart. Nix has been a heavy favorite throughout the course of the summer to take the first snap for the Broncos this year. Is this more of a smokescreen, or might Stidham actually be their starter week one?
I still think Bo Nix wins that job. You know, I don't put a ton of stock into, you know, the unofficial depth charts that we get in early August. You know, there was a lot said about Bo Nix being listed third there. I'm not reading anything into that just yet. You know, if he's still listed third as we get deeper into the month, then you might make a case that, you know, he might not be the starter in week one. But I think watching his film last year, these past two seasons in Oregon, you see a quarterback that I think in many ways looks like the perfect Sean Payton quarterback. You know, he's so good with his mind, makes a lot of defenses pay with his mind, with the decision-making that he shows as a quarterback from the pocket. I think he was in many ways built in a lab to play quarterback for Sean Payton. Sean Payton can do so much conceptually, but he needs a quarterback that's going to sort of go through the checklist, go through that mental progression on a snap-to-snap basis at a high level. And that's what Bo Nix showed at Oregon. He certainly has some athleticism as well, can make some big shot plays downfield, particularly when he's got favorable concepts and matchups. And so I really think that by the time we get down to the actual depth charts that matter, Nix will be listed as the starter.
All right, he is Mark Schofield, NFL writer over at SB Nation. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Mark, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate all the analysis.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mark.
Good stuff there. Mark Schofield joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. If you want more expert analysis just like that, take advantage of the VSiN 3-year special. Go to VSiN.com/specials. 75% off the monthly price for the next 3 years, but you have to do it by Sunday. Make sure you get that done. We'll be back on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe and Mike Palm hanging out with you guys on a Football Friday here at the Circa Resort and Casino. Thank you to Mark Schofield of SB Nation who joined us in the last segment. Mark does a terrific job covering the National Football League for SB Nation. Also does some Formula One as well. So if you're interested in the Formula One and those betting markets, make sure you check out Mark Schofield's Twitter account at Mark Schofield. Want to update folks on what's happening right now in Paris at the Olympic Games. USA. USA, the United States women's 4x100 meter team won gold thanks to Sha'Carri Richardson anchoring our 4x1 team, and they were able to go ahead and rally from behind to take another gold medal on the track. 41.78 seconds is probably the better way to say that. It was the time for the U.S. in the 4x100, so we got that victory home Also, the United States women's basketball team punched their ticket to the gold medal match as well. They'll be looking to play the winner. I believe it's France. And France is somebody else in the semifinal, the other one. But USA's...
Belgium.
Belgium?
I think
Belgium?
France and okay. Belgium.
France and Belgium. Mm-hmm. USA likely to be a heavy, heavy favorite in that match as they dispatched Australia earlier today in the semifinals. So they're going for their eighth consecutive gold medal in women's basketball, which is pretty remarkable. Obviously, the men's basketball team punched their ticket to play France in the gold medal game. That'll be tomorrow afternoon. But right now we have a gold medal game in men's soccer between France and Spain. France, man, they're in all these things. Obviously, being the host nation, they put a good foot forward in all of this. But Spain has a 3-2 lead as we're now in the 84th minute. It was 3-1 at halftime, but France went ahead and got another one back. So it should be a fun about 10 to 15 minutes of soccer. How much stoppage time do you think they're going to put on there for France if they're down by one?
I haven't, you know, because the show's been going on, I haven't seen a lot of the second half. I would guess, you know, the minimum is like 7 minutes in these.
It might be 10.
It's like, remember World Cup, they were doing 10 and 12 right away to start. And France is behind. Yeah, you might get 9-10 minutes.
I'll never forget.
I'll be shocked if it's less than 7.
I'll be shocked, yeah. There's no way it's less than 7. Mm-hmm. I remember, I'm Nigerian descent, Nigerian and Uganda, but Nigeria was in the World Cup, their third group match game against Argentina. And if mm-hmm. Nigeria won or drew, they would advance and Argentina would have been eliminated. So Argentina scores a goal in like the 80-something minute to go up 2-1. And this was the World Cup in Russia where their stoppage time was out of control. There was like 8 minutes, 7 minutes. Of course, now that Argentina is up 2-1, stoppage time, 4 minutes. And this was like, there was multiple VAR checks in the second half and all this. I was just like, of course. They want to get Messi through to the knockout stage.
Better believe it.
And they went ahead and were successful in doing that. So I've always had a gripe with the VAR and the stoppage time and all that nonsense that goes on in world football, as they say, across the pond. But that's going on between France and Spain. I did want to talk to you, though, about the basketball that we'll have coming up tomorrow, because not only do we have the United States taking on France in the gold medal game, we also have the losers of those semifinals, Serbia and Germany, in the bronze medal match. And right now, looking at the betting market for those, Germany opened a 1-point favorite, but it's since flipped to Serbia laying 2.5. My instincts, Mike Palm, is to bet Germany in this spot. Serbia, I mean, they kind of emptied the tank. I think a lot of people saw what they saw yesterday and them pushing the United States to the brink. It meant so much for Serbia to go ahead and get to a gold medal kind of game. They fell just short of it. And this is a Germany team that, you talk to a lot of smart people who cover the Olympic basketball and the FIBA stuff and who bet this stuff. A lot of them said that Germany was going to be the team that was going to be the toughest competition for the United States. They never crossed paths in this Olympics. I think Germany's a bet here in the bronze medal game that tips off at 2 a.m. West Coast time. So you make sure you do that before you go to sleep tonight.
I completely agree with you. I think Serbia hit the wall yesterday in that game. They got off to the big lead, and I think they're probably pretty emotionally empty right
they
now.
Gotta be trained.
I know they're playing for a bronze medal, but I like Germany a lot in this spot. I actually thought Germany should be favored by 2.5.
I think it's a banger spot for Germany. I've been looking at these markets. I'm like, wow, the one that jumps out is this bronze medal game. Germany, of course, they're led by Dennis Schröder, the Wagner brothers, Franz Wagner, Mo Wagner, who play on the Orlando Magic. Daniel Theiss is on the team as well. So it's not like a big star-studded team, but they play well together. They also won the FIBA World Cup. I believe that was last year when they won that, when the United States sent over like Austin Reeves and all these guys to go ahead and represent our country. But I think Germany is a really, really good spot. Looking at the best money line price that you can find out there, it looks like plus 115 is the best money line price. But that is a bet that I'm going to make at some point between now and 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. Likely going to be after this show. It's not going to be at 2 a.m. tomorrow as I'll be asleep and hopefully wake up to a winner.
Yeah, I'll be with you on it. Here's the men's final coming up in the 4x100.
Okay.
So I was an hour off. I thought it was 11:30 and 11:50, but I guess it was 10:30 and 10:50 for the 2 4x2s.
Are we favored in this?
Yeah,
I'm assuming favored. So.
No, Jamaica.
Jamaica's
out, and I think Noah Lyles is running here.
I thought Noah Lyles was going to be done because of the COVID.
Who knows? He ran with COVID. He ran. Now, they qualified with the team that they said that maybe only one of those guys would run in the finals. But
somebody had a bad exchange. I hope that wasn't us. It might have been France. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's the whole key to these races, right?
Yeah, you got to nail the exchanges. I love the 4x1 race, though. It's so good. I don't even know who's in the lead. We got France out there. All right, here we go with the anchors. Here we go with the anchor. Oh, whoa. Outside lane. He's moving. I don't know what country that is. Where are we?
We are sixth, I think.
Yeah, I didn't think that did not end well for us in the 4x1. Who was in the outside lane? I don't know.
They had to lead the whole way. But
what country is this? Is this Canada?
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada wins gold in the men's 4x100. They were cruising. Yeah.
Way out front.
Where the hell were you?
Curly, Fred Curly, did we, in the anchor leg.
Okay, Curly said that he was the fastest man alive. Didn't see it there. Did not see it in this gold medal 4x1 race. Did we even medal in this?
No. No. Fifth or sixth, I think.
Wow. So no podium for us. At least the women got it done for us.
The women got it.
With Sha'Carri Richardson. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think Noah Lyles ran in this one because I think he said that I'm not going to do it now that I have COVID, even though he did run the 200 with COVID. It's just stupidity. But that's what he decided.
Amazing.
It really is amazing. He tested positive and then he knowingly ran with it. But
Quincy Hall, I thought, was the story of the men's side.
Sensational.
Right? And the comeback in the stretch. I thought he was you could have got him at like $2 plus $2. I was looking at the odds. I thought he ran the easiest qualifier in the semis. Like, he didn't seem to be stressed. And then it looked like at the head of the stretch he was done and came back. So I was happy for him. I think the best athlete is McLaughlin LeBron. I mean, she is in a world of her own in these. Like, her hurdle times would become close to meddling in the flat 400. It's incredible. And she sets a world record every time she goes out. Beats her own record.
Is she the most dominant U.S. Olympian that we have this
Absolutely.
Year?
Absolutely. I believe so.
Because the conversation is what? Simone Biles. Yeah. I don't think Ledecky's in the conversation anymore. If you just talk about the 800 meter freestyle, Ledecky's in that conversation, but just as an overall swimmer, I don't think she's in the conversation anymore. The U.S. women's basketball team is definitely in that conversation. But I mean, what Sydney McLaughlin Lavroni does, it is insane. Do we have a VAR check?
VAR check for a penalty on a corner kick that would give France a chance to tie the game.
Oh, shocked.
He's made a quick decision, so I guess it's going to be a penalty.
Let's go to the VAR.
He only looked at it for 5 seconds.
Is he going to point at the spot?
Yeah, sure he is. He only looked at it for 5 seconds. Oh, they do the audio announcements here.
Because usually you get the square. He looks like he's pointed somewhere. Penalty. Yeah, he pointed to. Wow. Mm-hmm. France might be back from the down 3-1. So what's interesting with this is that France opened as the favorite, I believe it was. Like, they were a pretty decent-sized favorite. Plus 150 to win in 90, the plus 205 to the draw. Mm-hmm. Spain was plus 215. So France, just to win, whether it was in the 90 or in extra time, minus 135, Spain plus 110. And if you're holding one of those Spain tickets, you're at the finish line. Especially if you're
3-1 in the 75th minute.
If you're holding Spain in the 90,
yeah,
and now you're sitting here, you might have to go to extra time in stoppage time because of a penalty kick, spot kick for the host nation. Is what we're talking about with that U.S. and France game.
They put up only 5 minutes, of course, after the penalty was called.
They'll add some more if they miss this.
Yeah.
They'll add some more stoppage time. Obviously, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I think these are things that are real, though, as well. Like, with some of these host nations, and you know, we talk about these Olympics, you know, they try to get themselves a decent spot to a gold medal. France being managed, of course, by Thierry Henry, the great French striker, who now is a soccer analyst, but is coaching the French men's national team here in this Olympics. Of course, it's the under-23, so it's not the Kylian Mbappes and N'Golo Kantes and all these guys that you are familiar with the France team that we saw at this past Euro tournament earlier this summer. So do you think he makes this kick? Well, a lot of pressure on this young
98%.
Man.
98%. Spain, the it's women a had a pressure. Kick to tie in the bronze game. There was a penalty after extra time expired, and that was the last kick, and it was saved.
Wow.
So Germany won 1-0.
For this young man, I hope he makes this kick. I really do. Because this, you don't want to miss.
I think it's like 99% that he'll make it.
Let's see. I mean, penalty. We're gonna
know
right.
5 minutes to set it up. Just everybody
kick the
knows.
Ball.
Just go and blow the whistle.
Kick the ball, please.
Come on, we got a break coming up.
We got 10 seconds left on the break to end the hour. Here we go.
Nice and easy.
Cashed it.
Yep, 3-0.
So we might be headed to extra time in the gold medal match as France has rallied back down 3-1, now 3-3.
There's Didier Deschamps.
Of course he's there. We'll be back to start hour number 2 next.